Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Shandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
Well, good morning, Compass. We are in the last week of our Access 100 series. This has been a great series, and really it's been a great thing for us as a church as God is moving us into some big challenges, into a big future that he has for us. And really the biggest thing that this has been all about is God driving us very hard and very specifically into our vision as a church, and that is to make God accessible to everyone. Really what Access 100 is all about as it, at its core is that. It's we live, we breathe, we die in order to make God accessible to people in our community, to our families, to our friends, to people who are around us, to people that we know. And so I'm pretty excited about what God's done through the series, what he's speaking to us, and really what he's going to be doing through our Access 100 campaign, which we're going to be talking about a little bit throughout the rest of the message today. So just lots of cool stuff. I will tell you this, if you have missed any of Access 100, I would very strongly encourage you to go to our website at compassbn.com and check out the podcast there so you can get caught up on really what God's been speaking to us, because this message series is probably, it may be the most important message series that we have all year. It may be the most important thing that God wants to speak to us as his church about what he wants to do through us and what he wants to do in us all year. So if you haven't caught up, go to our website, go to the podcast on iTunes, just search Compass Church, check this out. Or if you want, you can find out more about the Access 100 campaign at access100.net. .com was taken, and they wanted to sell it to us for thousands of dollars, and I said no. So access100.net, you can check out the details of our campaign there. So I don't know if you're like me, but I have a coffee house that I go to. It's kind of my coffee house. It's the place that if somebody wants to meet, it's just our default meeting space. I like the coffee. It's just my favorite place to be. Now, they have instituted a change recently. Now, what would happen before is you'd go in, you'd order your coffee, you'd give them your card, you'd slide it, they'd give you a little receipt, you'd sign it, and it's all good. You go get your coffee, and it's great. And just like any other coffee shop, they got a little tip jar where you can drop in tips if you like your service or you like your coffee, whatever. Well, they've instituted a change at my favorite coffee shop, and what they do now is they have an iPad, and they slide your card in the iPad, and then what they do, with the line of people behind you, everyone in the shop around you, they hand you the iPad across the counter. When you take the iPad, you look at it, and on the screen, all it says is this. How much would you like to tip? $1, $2, $3, or other? And then underneath it is a button that says no tip. Now here's the thing. They give you this iPad, right? They put it in your hand, and you have to hold it. There's someone next to you in line. There's people behind you, and you have to hold this thing, and you have to say whether or not you are going to tip the person who is getting your coffee for you right there. Now, for me, it just made me super uncomfortable. Okay, I was weirded out by this. I was a little frozen, like deer in the headlights. I didn't totally know what to do. And so I didn't stop going. It's my favorite place. So what I've done is I've tried out all the different options. So I've tipped. You know, I've hit the $1 or $2. I did that. I tried, this is probably the one I do more than any other, which is I will take the iPad and pick it up, because if they just set it on the counter, you literally have to push the no tip button in front of the person who you're no tipping. So I will pick it up and I'll hold it like to my chest, and then I'll kind of with my thumb just bounce over to the no tip. Maybe sometimes I'll have a finger higher on the screen where I'm not actually touching a button, but my thumb will hit no tip. So I've tried that. I've started just ordering brewed coffee where they just turn around and fill up a cup with coffee, because I feel like if I'm just getting brewed coffee instead of like my typical Americano, that they're putting less work into it, and so I feel less guilty for not tipping them. I mean, I've tried all sorts of things to try and navigate how it makes me feel when they just put this thing in front of me, forcing me to say no tip. And here's the thing, like, you know, they don't know what's going on in my life. They don't know if I'm broke. They don't know if, like, I'm literally spending the last $2 in my bank account to get a cup of coffee, you know, before I just go into the corner and cry because I'm broke. You know, they don't know that I'm paying for this on a credit card and I don't want to finance a $2 tip for the rest of my life. You know, they don't know. All they know is that they're giving me this thing and that I am saying no tip. And, you know, maybe I just don't even like their coffee. Maybe I don't even like you, and I'm just not tipping you. They don't know that, though. And so it puts me in this kind of uncomfortable situation where I have to say, no, I don't want to give you that. So today, in our Access 100 series and in our campaign, today is our Pledge Sunday. Today is the day that we are going to come together and that we are going to make commitments to what we are going to do to be a part of raising the $100,000 that's part of our Access 100 campaign. And again, if you're not super up to speed on that, you can check out access100.net and get more details, or you can just hit me up in the lobby. We can grab coffee sometime and we can talk through it. But today is the day that we're taking our pledges to make God accessible in 2016. And it's a very big year. But here's the thing. When you came in, everybody was given one of these, right? You got one of these, and inside that is this pledge card, okay? And on this pledge card, there's a spot that you can fill in for your pledge. Now you receive this and you're coming in here and you're sitting here and you're holding this and you're like, way to go, Chris. You give me this pledge card, you make me sit down in front of everyone else and I've gotta like fill this thing out and like say what my pledge is gonna be. And already some of you guys are thinking like, okay, do I just pretend to write it and then fold it? Do I just write a fake name on here with maybe just nothing on there? You know, no tip. Because here's the thing, Chris, you're putting me in this awkward situation right now where it's like, you know, I gotta say no. Because look, you know, and you don't, Chris, you don't know what's going on in my life. You don't know how broke I am. You don't know how little money I have or how insecure my job situation is right now. You don't know what's going on in my life when you're asking me for money like this. You don't know what's going on in my life when you're asking me to make pledges, and now you're putting me in this awkward position where I have to say no when I really believe in the vision of Compass. I believe in the vision to make God accessible to everyone, but the fact of the matter is that I just can't help you. So here's what I want to do today. I want to talk about that very feeling. I want to talk about that uncomfortable, awkward sense when you are holding this pledge card in your hand and you're feeling like, Chris, I want to do something. I believe in the church. I love what's happening in my life, in my family, in people's lives, but you just don't know what's happening. I can't do this. I just don't have enough to do this. I want to talk about that feeling because ultimately, I want you to know this. God knows what you're going through. Okay, God knows what's happening in your life. God knows what you have. God knows what you need. God knows. And so he's aware of that. And what I want to do is I want to look at the story, the true story that happened in the life of someone who had this exact same feeling and how God called them to something bigger and he worked them through this. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at a life of a story of a man called Elijah. Now, Elijah was a prophet in Israel, and this is Old Testament. This is, you know, hundreds of years before Jesus. And Elijah was, as a prophet, he was a guy who went around and he essentially spoke for God. God gave him messages to speak to his people, and Elijah delivered those messages to the people. That was his role and his responsibility. And there's a point in Israel's history in Elijah's lifetime where there was a famine on the land. Like for 3.5 years, there was no rainfall at all. And because there was no rainfall, there were no crops. And with no crops, there's no food. And so over this 3.5 years, people were getting hungry. People were starving to death. People didn't have resources to feed themselves or their families. And things were looking pretty desperate and pretty bad at this point in Israel's history right now. And so we're going to pick up the story with the background of Israel being in the middle of this famine. We're in 1 Kings chapter 17, verse 8. And then the Lord said to Elijah, go and live in the village of Zarephath near the city of Sidon. I've instructed a widow there to feed you. Okay, so this is how our story starts. The story starts with God speaking specifically and directly to two people. First, he speaks to Elijah, and he says, Elijah, I want you to go from your hometown. And Elijah's hometown was a village called Tishbe, and it was where he'd grown up, is where his home base of operations was. God said, I want you to go from your hometown, and I want you to go to Zarephath. And there, a widow is going to take care of you. Now, Tishbe to Zarephath was about 100 miles. I mean, depending on the route that you took and the terrain that you took. So God said, Elijah, I want you to get up and I want you to journey 100 miles from where you are by foot to where I want you to be. So God first spoke to Elijah. Second person God spoke to was a widow who was already in the town that God was sending Elijah to. And God had spoken to her and he had basically said, listen, there's gonna be a guy who's gonna be coming to you sometime here in the future. I'm bringing Elijah the prophet to your home. And when he gets there, sometime in the future, I want you to take care of him and I want you to feed him. So our story starts, God is speaking to two people and he's bringing them together. Okay, so the story continues in 1 Kings chapter 17, verse 10. So he went to Zarephath, and as he arrived at the gates of the village, he saw a widow gathering sticks And he asked her, would you please bring me a little water in a cup? So Elijah makes it. He's traveled 100 miles. It's a journey that could have taken anywhere from 5 days to a couple weeks, depending on the pace that he took or the route that he took to get there. And he walks into the village and he sees the woman. He sees this widow and he knows this is who God spoke to. This is the person that God has sent me to talk to, and he sent me to feed me and to take care of me. And so he starts right out of the gate. Hey, will you get me some water? Which, that's an easy ask, right? She's standing outside the village. There's probably a well. She's gathering sticks. And so she's like, sure. So as she's going to get it, he calls to her and he says, bring me a bite of bread too. Okay, now this, I can relate to what Elijah's doing here, because sometimes, like, you know, if my family's sitting around the TV, you know, eating ice cream or something like that, and one of my kids gets up, I might be like, hey, Cameron, will you get me a napkin? And she'll say, sure, I'll get you a napkin. She goes in the kitchen. While she's there, I'm like, hey, would you scoop me 3 more scoops of ice cream in a different bowl, put chocolate syrup on it, whipped cream, and blend it up with a little bit of milk? Can you do that for me too? She's like, Dad, stinking, come on. But like, I know what it's like to do, you know, you get an inch and you take a mile. That's Elijah right now. Will you give me some water? Sure. She gets some water. And then he's like, by the way, why don't you make me some food too? Get me something to eat. And this is how it hits this woman. But she said, I swear by the Lord your God that I don't have a single piece of bread in the house. And I have only a handful of flour left in the jar and a little cooking oil in the bottom of the jug. And then she looks at him and she says, I was just gathering a few sticks to cook this last meal. And then my son and I will die. Elijah asks for water first, then he asks for food. And she looks at him and she's like, dude, you don't even know. You have no idea what is happening in my life right now. You have no idea what I have. And she's like, let me explain something to you. All I have, I tell you what, just put your hand out. Just put your hand out just like this. Just cup your hand and hold it out. That is all she had to feed herself and her family. One handful. She looks at Elijah and she says, this is it, dude. This is all I've got. It's not even enough for one full meal. And I've been struggling to make it. And I realize this, this is it for us. So I'm gonna cook this and I'm gonna feed it to my family, right? And then we're just gonna die because that's it for us. Our kitchen cupboards are bare. We have nothing. This is it. All I have is what I can hold in my hand. And this is no surprise when you think about it. Israel's in the middle of a famine, and this woman is a widow. Now, widows couldn't inherit. And if a woman's husband died before her children were of age and they could work, I mean, she had no one to take care of the land. She had no one to take care of their animals if they had animals. There was no one to do the work. And so it's just her and her son. She may have had other kids as well. Later on in the passage, it's going to refer to her family. But oftentimes in the Old Testament, they would talk about sons as being the main part of the family. She may have had a couple daughters. She had a family that she was taking care of, and she had nothing. She was broke. Not only that, widows had to depend on the charity of people to take care of them if they couldn't take care of themselves, and if they didn't have kids who could take care of them, adult sons or adult daughters. And so, you know, in the middle of a famine, everybody knows what happens to charity when times are tough, right? It dries up. I mean, what's the first thing that people stop giving to when things are tight? Charity. So here's a woman who's a charity case, and she's got nothing. No one's taking care of her. She doesn't have anything that she can eat. And now this woman who's a charity case, she has a guy who's coming and asking her for charity on top of everything else. It's strange to think about this, because God could have chosen anyone to send Elijah to. God could have chosen a family that was doing fine. God could have chosen a family that was wealthy, that had a lot of kids to do a lot of work, that had done a good job of saving up food and saving up money so that they could make it through the famine. God could have sent Elijah to those people. And you know what? If he had it, it wouldn't have been that painful for them. You know, maybe they would have had to sacrifice a little bit, and it might have stung. They maybe had to eat a little bit less for their meals in order to feed Elijah, but it wouldn't have been life or death. And make no mistake, for this widow, Elijah's ask is a life or death ask. And so here she is. She doesn't have much to give. She doesn't have anything to offer. And God is saying, I want you to be obedient. I want you to give what you don't have. But when Elijah shows up and he's face to face with her, she does what I do when I get handed that iPad across the counter. And she looks at Elijah and she's like, dude, no tip.
I can't do this. She says, I can't. I know God asked me to, but I can't. I don't have it. This is what happens. 1 Kings 17:13. But Elijah said to her, don't be afraid. Go ahead and do as you've said, make a little bread for me first. So take that little handful of flour and make that one little tiny handful loaf of bread that you were gonna make and that you were gonna split with your kids and then you were just gonna go die. Do that, but then just take a little bit of that bread and give it to me first and then use what's left to prepare a meal for yourself and your son. Now, think about this from the widow's perspective. I mean, dude, are you tone deaf? Do you not understand what I just told you? We are going to die because we have no food and we are literally gonna have a last meal before we do that and you're saying, give it to me first? Are you nuts? I mean, that dude, Elijah's got some nerve. I mean, one time when Terry and I, several years ago, we lived in Normal, and we had one of those magazine guys come knocking on our door. You have one of those magazine people come to your door ever, trying to sell you magazines? So I'm there alone. We were young. Our kids were babies, right? And I'm answering the door, and I got babies. I'm just home alone with babies in the living room. And I answer the door, and there's this stocky-looking college kid, and he comes to the door, and I open him like, hey, and he's like, hey, you know, I'm just selling magazines because I'm trying to earn a trip to Switzerland or Israel or wherever they earn trips to. And he's like, if I can sell this many magazines, then I'll get enough credit, and I'll be able to go on this great European backpacking trip, and it's just going to be amazing. And you could really help me get there if you could just take a look at this and maybe subscribe to some magazines. And he does this where it's like, he literally, like, puts it, like, in your hand and then just, you know, you touched it last, dude. And so here I am. I've got it, and I'm, like, looking at it, and we were so poor, okay? We were so poor. We were young with three babies. If you're young and you got babies, you know what it's like to be so poor, and that was us. So I'm looking at this thing, and I'm like, dude, I'd love Entertainment Weekly. That would be awesome, but I can't afford this. And I'm flipping through, and because I want to be courteous. I don't want to be rude. So I want to, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to consider this. And I'm like, I hand it back, and I was like, you know what, man? I said we really can't right now. And the truth is, this is the truth, is that we had just bought a magazine from someone at church who was selling magazines, someone in youth group who's trying to raise money stupidly because we're people who can't say no to that stuff. And don't send your kids to me, by the way, having said that. Send them to my wife. She can say no better than I can. So I'm like, dude, we actually just did this. And so, we really can't do another one. He's like, well, I mean, are there any other magazines that you might like? And I'm like, well, I mean, sure, but we got one. And honestly, we probably don't really read them that much. And I just can't do it right now. And he said, well, I mean, you know, you don't have to pay it right now. I mean, you can pay it when it comes and just get the subscription. You just sign up. And so he's getting a little assertive and stuff. And I was like, dude, I said, listen, I just can't afford it. I said, I can't afford it right now. And he stops smiling, right? And his face gets real, like, kind of angry. And he kind of steps forward. And no joke, like, if I had a gun, I'd be, like, behind the door, like, come on, dude. That's like, but I didn't, and I wasn't. Just if you come to my house and I answer the door, I don't routinely hold a gun behind the door. Just, but his face stops smiling, and he steps up a little bit, and he says, you can't afford $2 a week? And I said, yeah. And he steps closer to me. I'm like, this dude's gonna bust into my house. I got babies behind me. And he looks me in the face and he goes, sucks to be you. Yeah. And I said, it really does. And I said, I'll see you later. And I'm calm, right? And so I shut the door calmly. I'm like, see you later. And then as soon as the door shut, I'm like, locks, chains. Baseball bat. But that dude had some nerve. I mean, he had the nerve to, like, push me on buying that magazine. And then he had the nerve to look me in the face and say, you can't afford $2? Come on, dude. What kind of loser are you? I was like, wow. That dude does not take no for an answer. And Elijah, when he's looking at this widow who's already told him, I got nothing. I'm getting ready to die and eat this food because I can't do anything. He has the nerve to not take no for an answer. And he says, okay, I understand all that, but tell you what, why don't you just do this and feed me anyway? He's got guts. So this is what happens. He says, use what's left to prepare a meal for yourself and your son after you make it for me. And he says, for this is what the Lord, the God of Israel says. This is what God says. There will always be flour and olive oil left in your containers, until the time when the Lord sends rain and the crops grow again. So Elijah says, you know what? Why don't you just do this anyway? Why don't you just make me this? And he's like, and I want to tell you something. This is what God says. God says, if you do this, you will always have what you need. You're always going to have flour. You're always going to have oil. There's always going to be enough left in the containers. And this is what God is promising through me to you. I mean, think about that. That's a huge thing. She's facing life or death. It's a life or death decision for her to give. And Elijah says, do this, but when you do it, you can trust God. Do this, and you can know that I'm going to take care of you. God is speaking to her through Elijah. And this is what God is saying. He's saying, look, I know you don't have much. I know that if you do this, that you will have nothing. And I know that if you do what I'm asking you to do, and if you're obedient to me, that's going to feel like there's no hope left for you and your son. But if you do this, if you do what I'm asking you to do, if you give the way I'm asking you to give, then I promise you, I will take care of you. If you do what I'm asking you to do, I will provide for you. And then God essentially is saying this. He's saying, will you trust me? Will you trust me? Now, this is a real will you trust me question, right? Because it's not just yes, God, I'm going to trust you. I just got to say it. She's got to put her money where her mouth is when it comes to trusting God. She's got to take the last of her food and give it to someone else instead of her starving and hungry children. And this is what happens. So she did as Elijah said. She does it. She says yes. And then she and Elijah and her family continued to eat for many days. Okay, now that's weird. She just had a handful, just enough for her and maybe her kids. I mean, just a tiny little piece of bread. How do you split that amongst the family, right? She knows that's it for her and she's done. And yet it says here that she did as Elijah said. She cooked it up. She gave some to him. And that she and Elijah and her family, they continued to eat for many days. So she added a full-grown adult man to her eating regimen, and they kept eating for many days. This is what God did. There was always enough flour and olive oil left in the containers, just as the Lord promised through Elijah. This is amazing. Whatever she needed, it was in the jar. Whatever she needed, it was there. She'd pour it out. She'd cook with it. She'd go back the next day. Whatever she needed, it was there. Again, the flour would fill up. The oil would fill up. It was there. God did it. Now remember this. God could have chosen anybody to feed Elijah. Okay, that's important for us to remember. God could have chosen someone with more money. He could have chosen someone with more resources. He could have chosen someone who had less family that they had to take care of with more food. He could have chosen someone that, honestly, it didn't affect that much. He could have chosen someone who had more margin and it wouldn't have made as big a difference or as big an impact in their lives. But God chose a widow who, if she shared it, she believed and she knew in her heart that it would be all she had and that she and her family would die. But here's the thing. In giving her the opportunity to provide for Elijah, he gave her the opportunity to be provided for herself. Now get this. She thought that she was gonna die if she gave. But the truth is that if she didn't give, that was when she was gonna die. She thought that if she gave what she had, that she was gonna die. She thought, I will die if I give this. But the truth is that she would die if she didn't give. What would happen if she didn't give? If she didn't give, she said no to Elijah, she'd cook her last little meal, she'd split it up amongst her kids, Elijah would go on his way, God would take care of him, and she and her family would starve to death. She thought she was gonna die if she gave, but the truth is she would have died if she hadn't. She thought she had so little that if she gave, she wouldn't have enough, when in fact, the only thing that she had was plenty as long as it was given. When a handful was all that she had in the world, one handful, that was when it was the most important in her life that she live open-handed with God. And that's something that we can take away. When all that we have is just a handful, that's when it's the most important in our lives for us to live open-handed. When God asks us to give something and we're scared because we don't have enough, all we have is just that little handful, all that little bit, that's when it's the most important to open your hands to God. See, we think this. We think that in order to get by, that we have to hold on to what's in our hands. And that if we're gonna get by, we have to hang on to what we have. But the reality is this, is when God asks, we have to give to get by. Say that again. We think that we have to keep to get by. We think that in order to get by, we have to hold on to what we have. But the truth is that when God asks, we have to give to get by. And that's what happened in this woman's life. Here, check this out. I don't believe that God sent Elijah 100 miles so that he could be provided for. I don't believe God sent Elijah 100 miles just so that he could have a meal prepared for him. You know how I know that? This is no joke. Before God sent Elijah to Zarephath, to this widow, God was feeding Elijah by having birds bring him food. Elijah had been sitting by a stream, right? That's where his little tent was, his little home where he was just hanging out, his little prophet village. He was just sitting there. There was a water supply. And no joke, birds were bringing him bread and they were bringing him meat so that he could eat. So every day, just a delivery of ravens just come in, bloop, just drop it off. And so, like, seriously, like, I guarantee you one of these birds probably brought him more bread than this widow had in her hand to give in entirety. God was taking care of Elijah. Elijah didn't need this woman's food. God didn't need this woman to feed Elijah in order to take care of him. That's just a fact. It was unnecessary for him. This is what happened, because Elijah would have been fine. What happened was this. God didn't do this to feed Elijah. He did it so he could save the widow. Yeah. He didn't do it to meet Elijah's needs. God already had Elijah's needs taken care of. He did this. He asked this widow to give. He asked her to open her hands, not because he wanted what she had, because he wanted to save her. She wouldn't have made it if she hadn't surrendered to God. She wouldn't have made it if she hadn't opened her hands. God asked her to give, not so that he could have what she had. He asked her to give so that he could save her. He chose someone whose lack of resources put her in a life or death situation to show that he could be trusted. That's why he chose the widow. He chose the widow to show that his promise is good. And it's so good, in fact, that when God asks you to give, he will take care of you. God chose this widow to show that she could trust him so much, that his promise is so good, that when God asks you to give everything, that you can do it. And you know what will happen? The crumbs that you have left over are gonna be enough to sustain you. They're gonna be enough to provide for you. They're gonna be enough to meet your needs, because it's not about what you have. It's not even about what you're giving towards. It's about what God wants to do in you when you live like this. And this widow's family, destined for death because they were obedient to God, they lived. This widow's family destined to death because he sent Elijah 100 miles for something that he didn't need to travel 100 miles for. But he sent Elijah to this woman so that she could provide and meet his need in such a way that God could not feed Elijah, but that God could save her. Now let's tie all this back into our Access 100 campaign. This campaign is all about raising $100,000 so that we can accomplish the vision and the mission that God has for our church to make God accessible to everyone. That's what it is all about. And as we've been talking about this, and you maybe with your spouse or your kids, or you've just been thinking about the pledge, what you want to do, what it might be, maybe God has put some numbers in your head. Maybe you've thought up some numbers on your own, and those numbers are a little scary. Maybe God's given you a clear number, and it's really scary. And I tell you, that's okay, because Terry and I are scared of the number that God gave us. I'll tell you this, if you aren't a little scared, then it probably isn't the number that God really has for you. I'll tell you this, if you think that you can't make it, if you think that you can't do what God might be asking of you, that's okay too. And our band's gonna come as I'm closing up, because just this one last principle that, like, if you can just grasp this, you can close your hands and hold on to what you have, and you can look at it and say, listen, God, you don't know what's happening in my life. I don't have enough. I can't do this. You could hold on to that, right? And you could enjoy it for a day, for a week, and then you're gonna find yourself in the exact same situation. Or you could open your hands and God can save you, and he could provide for you for a lifetime, Because what he's interested in is what's happening in your heart. Is your heart open to him? Do you trust him? Are you going to allow him to provide for you? Are you going to allow him to meet your needs? Whatever God's asking you to do in our Access 100 campaign, you may hold it back because you just don't have it. You just don't have enough. And you could take what you have and it'd be great for a day. Or you can open your hands and God will take care of you for a lifetime. How do we know this? He did it. He did it. God cares about your family. God cares about your needs. He cares about your wants. And by trusting him, by opening your heart and opening your hands to him, you can see him move in you. And just, I'll tell you this, as it relates to our Access 100 campaign, you know, it may be that God doesn't need your money. God could, you know, Bill Gates could write us a check for $50 billion tomorrow. And like, God, that'd be sweet. You should do that. God could do that. You know, I could drive home, get in a car accident, you know, and hit a rock and oil sprays out of it. And I'm an oil millionaire. God could do weird things, okay? He could feed us with birds. Like God, literally, we could open the doors of the theater and God could fly birds in and they could drop $100 bills on us. That's weird, but it could happen. God could do that. But more often, God chooses to work through us, not because he needs what we have, but because he wants to save us. Your pledge to Access 100, your commitment that you make, it may not be about Access 100. It may be about God wanting to save your family. It may be about God wanting to save you from something that you're headed towards. But he wants you to trust him. He wants you to be obedient for what he asks you to do. And when we do that, he moves in our lives in powerful, incredible ways. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to get ready to take pledge cards. If you've heard about Access 100, you've been thinking about it for a couple weeks. Maybe, again, this is the first time you've thought about it. Here's what I want to do. I want you to pull the pledge card out of that, you know, the Access 100 brochure. Just take that in your hands. There should be a pen in all of our welcome packets. If you need another pledge card, we have some. So if you need one of these and you don't have it, just slip your hand up. Our hospitality team will have one for you. I don't want anybody to be left out, but if you need a card, that's fine. You can grab one. There's some up here. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to sing this song a couple times, and I want you in this next couple moments, just alone with you and God, ask God what he wants you to do. Confirm with God what he's asking of you, and then write that on this pledge card just as an act of obedience, like the widow of Zarephath, just saying, you know what, God, this is scary. It's a terrifying number, but I say yes. I say yes to you. Then after saying this a couple times, I'm going to come back up, and we're going to collect pledge cards in this morning's offering. So let's just take a moment. Everybody close your eyes. Just get alone with God. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to sing this song, and then we're going to collect the cards. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for the commitment that you've given us, that you will provide for us, and that you will meet our needs. I thank you, God, for your promise that you will never leave us or forsake us. And I thank you, God, for the promise that we can find in your word, that we can trust you, that we can be obedient to you, even when it seems like it's going to put us in a hopeless situation, that if we're obedient to you, that you will never abandon us. You will always provide for us. And so, God, as we put together our pledges this morning, I ask that you would give us faith, and I ask that you would speak clearly, Lord. Just over these next few moments, God, speak clearly to our hearts.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.